This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawera Karatai. Kia ora, Mawera.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. We have another episode of Coming Up for Air coming up.
We do indeed. It is my great pleasure to introduce the very clever Alexander Krauss. Welcome, Alexander. It is a great joy to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Welcome, Alexander. Where did you grow up, Alexander?
I grew up in Germany, in Düsseldorf, which is in the west of Germany.
What was it like growing up there?
I can't complain. It was I was growing up close to, like, in a big city, but more close to the outskirts. So I had a bit of city and a bit of, you could almost say, farms around there also a bit, and animals. So that was really nice.
What should we know about Düsseldorf?
We have better beer than Cologne, which is a close city nearby.
And what did you want to be when you grew up?
A garbage man, actually. I was always fascinated by how, like, fast and efficient they collected stuff everywhere. And I always wanted to drive. Because I don't know if they do that here, actually, but in Germany, they're allowed to drive just on the back of the car, on, like, little platforms. They're just hanging there. And I always wanted to do that, but I was never allowed to.
It always surprises me when you see the trains in the shunting yards in Dunedin with the people walking alongside them, driving the train by remote control. It just doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
So once you decided that being a garbage man wasn't the career for you, what did you decide to do?
I had a very good teacher in, it's a combined subject in Germany. So it's sociology, politics, and economics. And I had a very good teacher who was very engaged and really wanted to taught us not only his point of view, but also just the big picture of everything, and really also challenged our views. And so I knew after that I wanted to go in one of these directions.
Other than just good teaching, what was it about that inspired you?
Good question, actually. I don't know. I it was the most interesting to me. And I like reading newspaper, and that's also was in the newspaper.
So, combined of sociology, politics, and economics, did you have to make a choice between those when you headed off for your undergrad?
In the end, I did business and economics as a bachelor. And I think it's very important to just know what's going on in the world. And, I mean, there are also other subjects that teach you that, but I think, it's important to know what's going on and not live inside your bubble.
And you're here on an exchange, and one of the courses that you're doing is sustainable business. Did you get much of sustainability in that undergrad, in your business and economics?
There was always a chapter about sustainability, mostly at the end of the book, or at the end of, or there was one paper about it that was integrated into the course, but I didn't really have any standalone subject as sustainability. So that was also the reason why I wanted to have a deeper insight into that topic. And I thought also it would be good to have that, especially here in New Zealand, as we're so surrounded by nature and also very impacted by nature, especially here. So I thought that would be a good foundation for my future development.
That's an interesting way of describing the relationship of sustainability to those other disciplines, shall we say, that it's a chapter at the end of the book, kind of that the weird chapter, or perhaps the looking forward chapter that nobody really reads.
It was a bit like that, to be honest, yeah. I think it was because the university once decided to be aware of sustainabilities in these topics, so they kind of pushed it in there, but it wasn't taken too seriously. I don't even know if it was part of the exams, but it was mostly one or two pages acknowledging that there is sustainability. And I also think that was a bit lacking. So, I thought it was a good thing to have that course.
So have some of the things that you've been talking about in the course with Muira and Joe, those bigger questions of what's the relationship of sustainability to capitalism or selling more stuff or consumer responsibility and all those sorts of things, were those almost philosophical questions part of that undergrad?
Not at all, no. It was more business related in terms of, sometimes it was quite interesting because they gave proof that sustainability can actually also make profits. For example, we had it once for housing, and then they were showing statistics that sustainable housing is actually more profit than regular housing in some cases, in some areas. That was interesting. But sometimes, it wasn't philosophical at all. It didn't give you any foundation. It was more a couple of sentences that it is important and that's the thing that it should be done, but it was more like a footnote on the website acknowledging that, we do that or should do that.
Let's take your music choice. Let's have Valentin Brama with Remember. Why this one?
It's a friend of mine. He's also from Düsseldorf, and we grew up together. And I thought it would be nice to hear him also aired in New Zealand.
I think that is the best reason for playing things. I'm very happy to do that.
Thank you.
I'd just like to point out that while that was playing, Mawira yawned and said that she was up early making bread. And this is because her inability to have a hobby without turning it into a business that we have talked about several times has meant that she's up at 3 o'clock baking bread.
Yes, but if you're going to get up at 3 o'clock to do something, well, there's nothing better than making bread. That's what I reckon.
I should do the intro, which is you're listening to Blowing Bubbles and we're talking with Alexander Krauss.
Alexander, we are now going to listen to your podcast. Who did you interview and why did you choose them?
His name is Julian Spratte. He was introduced by a friend of mine over some other friends. And he introduced this project to us. And he had the plan to go to Madagascar and build this pellet factory or this pellet machine. And we joined him to go to Madagascar and helped him organizing things, building the buying the materials for building the foundations and making everything ready, because they had a container shipped from Germany down to Madagascar. But it was a bit difficult concerning customs and these things. So we could only start building the foundation for it and organize things.
Alexander, is there anything in particular that you'd like our listeners to listen out for as they hear your podcast?
Yeah, what I'd like to point out is that, engaging for sustainability is sometimes seen as a privilege also. And also you can see that all mostly people engaging who can kind of afford it. But I think this view got really challenged in Madagascar, because Madagascar is a very poor country. Concerning what numbers you look at, it's one of the fourth poorest country in the world. I also didn't know that before I went there. And a lot of people are engaging for the environment there, especially as they're really dependent on the environment. And that really challenged my view that sustainability is only for those who can afford it. I think everyone who's impacted by it can do something.
Awesome. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, my name is Alex. I'm an exchange student from Germany, now here at the University of Otago. And I'm having the chance to share some ideas on a contemporary topic in sustainability with you. So today I want to discuss how businesses can balance profitability with sustainability through the concept of shared value. Contrary to what many believe, a business's primary objective might not always be to make profits, at least not in the short term, but to stay in business. Many tech giants like Uber, Spotify, and Snapchat have gone years without turning any profit, yet they continue to operate. They do this by focusing on gaining a competitive advantage and staying relevant. To survive in fiercely competitive markets, companies often prioritize growth, market share, and customer acquisition over profitability. In this pursuit, some may neglect corporate social responsibility, also called CSR, or view it as a secondary concern. However, in 2011, Harvard Business Review article written by Michael Porter and Mark Kramer — some of you may know Michael Porter from its famous Five Forces — they argued that companies can go beyond traditional CSR by integrating social and environmental considerations into their core business strategies, ultimately using these to gain a competitive advantage. There are some examples how this shared value approach can be put into action. One example is Walmart's Closed Loop Fund, which helps cities building recycling infrastructure. Walmart benefits by securing a steady supply of recycled materials, while communities can reduce landfill waste. This demonstrates how addressing environmental issues can also lead to a stronger supply chain. Another example comes from Novo Nordisk's diabetes campaign in China. In the 1990s, many people in China were not aware of their diabetes condition. So by introducing an awareness campaign, Novo Nordisk improved health outcomes for millions while also generating a lot of money from the market of insulin. Here, health and profit came together in a way that benefits both society and the company. These examples show that businesses can succeed by tackling big societal changes. But one of the most pressing issues today is climate change. One significant contributor to climate change is deforestation. Deforestation accelerates CO2 emissions and devastates ecosystems. This is why the EU is about to introduce a law against deforestation. The law should ensure that products entering the EU have not caused deforestation or forest degradation. But there is some criticism, as the Financial Times points out. Indonesian palm oil producers have warned of global supply chain disruption if the EU proceeds with a ban on the import of commodities linked to deforestation this year. Today, it is the 13th of September, the Chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, has announced or has asked the EU to put the law on hold due to the criticism. I think this shows that developing countries where much of the deforestation occurs face tremendous pressure from wealthy nations to implement sustainable solutions. But these demands come at a time when many developing countries simply can't afford expensive technologies like solar or wind, or not engage in deforestation. So in Mali, many developing countries have challenges with not engaging in deforestation go beyond just financial constraints. In a 2023 review on sustainable energy policy, Pascal Marcello-Falconi emphasizes that institutional barriers, limited technology access, and the lack of infrastructure make it difficult for these nations to transition to renewable energy. So these hurdles create a complex environment where sustainable solutions are often out of reach for the most vulnerable populations. This is particularly evident in the fact that 2.6 billion people worldwide cook without access to electricity, relying instead on fossil fuels or biomass like trees, which leads to deforestation. So this reliance not only contributes to deforestation, but also leads to significant health issues from indoor air pollution. So while developed countries may advocate for solar, wind energy, or growing trees, these solutions remain too expensive or inaccessible for many regions, especially in sub-Saharan Africa or Southeast Asia. Here's where the idea of shared value comes in. While wealthy nations push for expensive renewables, business opportunities may lay in developing affordable, localized energy solutions. I had the opportunity to speak with Julian Spratte, who is a member of the University in Düsseldorf, and he's been working on an innovative project in Madagascar. He focuses on addressing both deforestation and energy poverty through sustainable business solutions. Specifically, he's developing a pilot factories that use locally sourced biomass as an affordable alternative to traditional cooking fuels like charcoal. This approach not only helps reduce deforestation, but also creates new economic opportunities for the local community. Although Julian's organization, Biopilots Energy, is not for profit, it exemplifies how organizations can align their values, interests, and positive outcomes with both society and the environment. Initiatives like this have the potential to evolve into sustainable business models, and this type of innovation is exactly what Porter and Kramer envisioned. It's not about philanthropy or one-off CSR projects. It's about integrating social solutions into the very core of a business's operations. So let's dive into our conversation where Julian shares more about his innovative project and the impact it's having.
Yeah, thanks for having me here, Alexander. BioPellets Energy is a social entrepreneurship from Germany, a nonprofit company. And we are providing energy for rural households in the southwestern of Madagascar by providing biomass pellets and pyrolysis stoves. That means that we have a pilot factory as an energy self-sufficient pilotizing plant in Madagascar and the surrounding people, delivering biomasses with no further use, like waste from crops or peanut shells, grass, and so on. And instead of the biomass delivery, they're getting some pellets or money, and they can use the pellets in these special stoves instead of cutting wood and using charcoal in inefficient fireplaces.
How did you come up with the idea, and what was the reason behind it?
Yeah, it plays on the problems are quite complex, and so a lot of people are doing some development aid also from Düsseldorf here from Germany to Madagascar, for Madagascar, and together with organizations in Madagascar. And so it wasn't my idea actually, but the students in Madagascar we are working with, they are already were producing pellets, but by hand. So a few bio briquettes per day. And so I took the chance to write the master thesis about developing a concept to find a solution to get an impact at place. So the pellets we need in a high amount of pellets, and also the other problem are the eroded soils. So to have it as a complex solution, we thought, okay, we have to also develop the pyrolysis stoves and test them and do the overall concept, also to have a concept against the eroded soils. Mm-hmm. So using the pellets and the stoves together is kind of plant coal production, and this you can use as a fertilizer. So yeah, the idea was a progress, to make it long story short.
And you're saying that the connection to Madagascar was already there, or why did you choose Madagascar as the first location?
Yeah, true. We already had contacts there. We have a professor, Omar Berizoa, who's working at the University of Yanaratsu. And he has some land which he provided for the pilot factory. He also founded the student association we are working with at place. And from time to time, he's in Germany here, connected to the church here in Düsseldorf. And that was the reason why everything grew together. And we took this chance to have a network for the develop aid. But nowadays it's not development aid anymore, it's development cooperation.
And maybe a bit more general question, what challenges did you face when implementing the project, and how have you overcome them?
First of all, you have the problem different education levels, you have different languages, obviously, intercultural differences, and also, of course, the money is a topic, because Madagascar is the fifth poorest country in the world. So you have expectations from both sides, and this was quite difficult in the beginning to bring this together. And as mentioned, we have a complex problem we are facing, like energy, health, agriculture nexus, and this nexus we are now also adding water management to. And these are the problems we were facing and we are still facing. But of course, we are doing progress in every field.
Yeah, I've also seen the progress concerning the burners that you developed, and also the stages of the burners. Could you maybe elaborate a bit on how that process was, developing these burners for the pellets?
Yeah, it's it's a good example for having these intercultural differences as well, because the first, you call it burners, we call it stoves, however, the first stoves brought to Madagascar were from stainless steel, made from stainless steel, and totally too expensive for the people at site. So they obviously they could use them, but they could not build them themselves or repair them if something was broken. So this was kind of trial and error. We had different models. We said, okay, we have to look which are the resources available at place and to make it simple and cheap and to make it accessible and to get a high acceptance level on using these stoves. So this was also progress. We have a few retired people here in Germany working on the project as well. We have one who's always developing different stove models and the promising models we took. We brought them to Madagascar. They adapted the principles, the drawings and so on, adjusted it a little bit, and then we brought it together to an overall concept. And nowadays we have four final models you can produce with the resources at place, like clay, most of it. And then you can use them for saving wood and charcoal. And by adjusting them a little bit by an insert, you can also use the pellets. That's nice. So we have for the rural areas, we have a cheap solution. We have a solution for the cities for charcoal saving. The cheap solution for the rural areas is for wood saving. And then we have also a school solution, because I think it's really important also to show the students, to the pupil, that there are solutions for using pellets as energy resource and to produce this fertilizer for the soils.
Was there anything that surprised you during this journey of developing and also founding the project?
I would say the crowdfunding was the most surprising thing, because in the beginning we thought, okay, it's an amazing overall solution we developed here, and we thought, okay, we need some money. And then we went a step into public and said, okay, here, that's our solution for people using wood as energy source. And in the beginning, it was hard to convince people. That was surprising, because a lot of people said that wouldn't work. That was a negative surprise, because we were all totally committed to our idea and thought, okay, it would work, definitely. And then we got the turnaround, and that was a positive surprise to see all the young people supporting us, and students, especially from the University of Applied Science Düsseldorf and other young people coming with us to Madagascar, helping at place, setting up the pellet factory and so on. And also then a lot of people donating into the project and so on make it possible to happen. And a really, really big surprise, positive surprise, is also the young people in Madagascar. They are really, really poor, but they are doing totally their best to save the environment, to be there in a kind of educational programs for the rural population, to show them alternatives and so on, to save their own culture and their own living conditions.
What has been most influential in helping you achieving these goals?
I would say it was the mentioned crowdfunding, because that was our step into public. Then there's no step back. Now you are in public, you are saying you have a solution for a project, or with the project you have a solution for a really, really big challenge. And then you really want to get it going. So this was, you do kind of marketing, try to get a big network and everything done. So the crowdfunding was a big instrument.
So you said it was also motivational for yourself to be in the position that you can't turn back anymore.
I think I've never worked that much in my life, like during the crowdfunding period.
Okay, yeah.
It was during COVID, so it was hard to meet people in person. So you had to write a lot of emails, get in contact with social media persons, with normal media persons. Journalism and so on was a big topic, like a media campaign. And having all this done in a digital way was quite time consuming.
And as a last question, what makes you optimistic about the future in sustainability?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say a lot of people are aware nowadays of climate change. That's a big thing. Climate change is a topic, especially in the African countries, how to adapt on the climate change, to learn to live with it and so on. So we are a whole planet working with this really big challenge. Makes me also optimistic that we are working together, and this is only possible if we are finding sustainable solutions. So nowadays, if you are also at University of Applied Science Düsseldorf, we don't just teach entrepreneurship anymore. We are teaching social impact entrepreneurship to make sure that you don't just run a business out of the motivation to earn as much money as possible, to have the motivation to gain an impact, to be sustainable, to help people, and then you are lucky and also money with it. Of course, it's a Western, maybe, view, because we, you know, we have a network here. We can do this, do it like that. But to have the bridge between the Western or the Northern view and the Southern view, and then bring it together in a sustainable way for entrepreneurship, for the technology solutions, for cultural behavior and so on, I think it's totally doable. And that's the reason why I'm optimistic on the topic.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jürgen. Thank you for your interview. That was really interesting.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Bye.
That was really interesting, Alexander. What was your big takeaway from the podcast interview?
I think it was very interesting to do the podcast in general. So I've never done anything similar like that. I was already quite familiar with the project itself because I was part of it. But it was a very, very interesting approach because, I don't know, back in my home university, you only write papers or write exams, especially multiple choice exams. So there's not that much of creativity involved. And I had also times where I thought, yeah, it was a bit challenging because I've never done anything like that before. But when I had it done and was listening to it, I was quite happy about it, trying it out, especially also since I like listening to podcasts.
Oh, that's so good. You've been to Madagascar. You were actually there and you were involved in the project. Can you tell us about your experience?
Yeah, it was a great experience. Before I went with there, I didn't know that the country is so poor. So that was sometimes a bit, that really had a big impact because sometimes it was just things that I've never seen like that before. But it was not only about work, it was also about engaging with the local university and the local students. And in the beginning, because we also knew that we have to work together, so before that we spent some time together and we made some little traveling around. They were showing us their city and their forest also, that we wanted to protect there. And that was an amazing experience.
When you think about your future and where you're headed to in your professional practice, what will you take from that experience into your practice space?
I think the master that I'm doing right now is export and internationalization management. And so I'm really interested in doing business or doing exchange here with other countries, and I think that's also where Madagascar really contributed to. So to see also the differences in how things are are done in other countries, being aware of it, but also respecting that. And in the case of Madagascar, for example, it was really difficult to get materials. So in, I don't know, in Europe, you would probably go to the shop and buy it, and that would be a matter of an hour maybe. But in Madagascar, it involved a lot of negotiation and getting the information who actually has what we need. And it wasn't that easy because you couldn't look it up in the internet. And also concerning exporting or internationalizing also the project, I think it's really difficult, important to be aware of that, yeah, things are done everywhere differently. And yeah.
It sounds like you encountered a lot of challenges in your time there, and had to be super resilient and innovative and really solutions focused. Where did that come from in your life? Like, how did you turn into the man that can be that guy on the spot solving problems?
I think being aware of other cultures kind of is also rooted in my family, as my mom is half Chinese. So my grandfather was Chinese, and already at family meetings I encountered different ways of doing things. But I think it was always quite interesting and always contributing to not have everything done the same. And I think there are always some up and downsides of how you do things. But I think it really contributed also to my development to grow up in an intercultural environment.
You've got a thesis coming up to complete your studies. What are you kind of thinking about for your thesis at this stage?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure yet what I will take as my thesis topic, but I'm thinking about the interplay of social sustainability and corporate political activity, because it's a very different thing to be socially responsible or having political actions from corporations towards the environment. It seems to be very, very different, but actually it's overlapping a bit. So a lot of companies that engage socially are not doing that for philanthropic reasons, but also to have certain legislation, especially in the developing countries. So they promise, for example, to the government that they will do something in order to get a return. So that of course raises ethical questions, and wanted to have a deeper look at that.
It's interesting because you might think that a business would be politically neutral, and I'm sure if you asked them, they'd say that they were politically neutral, unless Elon Musk is running it. But they of course are lobbying big time to set things up and to influence things in the way that is going to suit them. But also there's that notion of you vote with your wallet. So if we're essentially voting for a better world with our wallet, which is a form of political activity, can we consider that businesses are doing the same thing in terms of what they're making? They're making with their factories. No, that's obvious. They're voting with their factories. They're in the way that we are voting with our wallets by what we buy. Can we consider that they are politically active in how they produce things?
Yeah, definitely. And where they produce things, and also how they engage with the environment. Some companies go to other countries and also build things for the community, for the local community. And from the research that I had on that topic yet, they do that sometimes explicitly, but also implicitly, in order for returns, not only to get lower barriers lowered for them, but also just to have a certain amount of risk buffer against legislation against them. So if you're kind of reliant on a certain corporation, you probably won't do anything to harm them.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability that works for you?
I think it's the use of resources mostly, sustainable use of resources. So sustainable in the sense of not excessive, maybe appropriate for your life and not not throwing them out of the window.
One of the criticisms of sustainability is that it's a first world take on problems and solutions. From your experience in Madagascar, do you think that we can better frame it to be inclusive of the global south?
Yeah, that's I think the interest and the motivation to do something is really there also in developing countries. I think only the demands should be appropriate, which is also relating to the podcast. So the solutions that might work in developed countries might not always work in developing countries. So I think it's, for example, building wind parks or solar parks is not really appropriate for Madagascar, for example, and having localized smaller solutions like the pallet factory that Julian talked about, I think are very good solutions to that problem, affordable solutions, also concerning infrastructure problems, for example, in countries.
Alexander, if I was the job fairy and I could wave my magic wand and create the perfect job for you, what would it be?
I think it would involve some sort of political integration, or at least being some part of the political arena. I think since, of course, I would like to do also something with sustainability or social responsibility that really opened up a new subject for me. And I would really like to do also something with other countries in the international context. So to be honest, I haven't really figured out the perfect job specifically for me, but there are definitely some areas that would be nice to have.
I think you're well on your way.
Thank you.
The perfect job.
I have some questions to end the show. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
I think that when I needed to speak publicly, I was, I got quite nervous, especially in English. That was a bit surprising to me because in high school, I never had problems speaking to a broader audience. But in university, I was, especially in English, because I did my bachelor in English, also because other people's grades were dependent on how I kind of perform in the next 10 minutes. It made me very nervous, so you could really hear that in my voice. And it was very hard and also a bit just annoying for me to have that. But and sometimes I really didn't want to have any presentations or speaking publicly. But I think I could turn that challenge actually to something I'm quite good at now, and now also enjoy doing, because I'm still nervous, but when you are nervous and then it's turning out well, I think it's even better than just being too relaxed about it.
What is your superpower?
I think it would be adaptability. I think I'm good in adapting to different environments, not only culturally, but also in general. So also when the same environment kind of becomes a bit more stressful in university, or I don't know, I think I'm quite good in handling that without stressing out myself too much.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
No.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
The sun. I think sometimes it's quite hard in Germany, or I think here as well, when it's dark in the morning and it's dark when you go home. But I think it is important to have something that is meaningful when you wake up, especially in your job, because I had that in some internships and it wasn't meaningful at all. It was just about, business stuff. So that really didn't want to, I don't want to have that waking up for this. So I think it's really important to have something to wake up for that's leaving something good behind.
So what is the biggest challenge or opportunity that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Getting a job. I only had internships and some jobs, but that were not really worth mentioning. So after all my studies and studying, I hope that I get a job that is fulfilling these things that is kind of meaningful, but that's also challenging. And I hope that someone is actually employing me.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Engaging in sustainable projects doesn't always have to be just giving money to other organizations. I think it's way more fun to get involved yourself and maybe have a look on what is available. I think these companies are not always best in advertising, so there needs to be some research done. But I'm very grateful that someone came up to me with a project of Madagascar, and otherwise I think I would have missed a great opportunity.
Alexander, it has been a real pleasure to have you on the show today, and also to share the teaching space with you. And I've really enjoyed your perspectives. You've added a really unique voice to our shared learning space at the university because of your cultural difference, because of where you've come from, because of these amazing experiences that you've had. You've really added a tremendous amount of value into that space. And wherever you end up, I know that you will continue to do so. So I wish you a path with heart, that you find that journey, that place where you will feel like you're making a difference and you get to use all of those things that are uniquely you. And all the best for the journey ahead.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We don't have many opportunities to go out to this, so we're going out to I Like to Move It. From Madagascar.
I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it.
All guns all over the world. Original mad stuntman, pan your case, man. I love how all the girls move their body. And when you move your body, you know, move it nice and sweet and sexy. All right? Woman, you're cute, and you don't need no makeup. Original cute body, you want make one man up. Woman, you're cute, and you don't need no makeup. Original cute body, you want make one man up. Woman, physically fit, physically fit, physically, physically, physically. Woman, physically fit, physically fit, physically, physically, physically. Nick, woman, you're nice, sweet, fantastic. Big ship on the ocean that I've been trying to. Nick, woman, you're nice, sweet, energetic. Big ship on the ocean that I've been trying to. Nick, woman, you're nice, sweet, fantastic. Big ship on the ocean that I've been trying to. Nick, woman, you're nice, sweet, energetic. Bishop on the ocean that I be trying to make woman. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. Mura Karatai in Whakatane introduced Alexander Krauss for his episode of Coming Up for Air. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Matewa. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.